Welcome to Church Media HQ. Bo's back. Let's get started. Welcome to Church Media HQ. My name is Luke Clayton, and co-host is back. Bo Snyder, the man himself, producer of the podcast. How long has it been since you've been behind the mic?
Oh, it's been a good 6 months, probably, yeah, or more. Yeah, it feels like it. I mean, before the whole world ended.
Yeah. So, So we kind of tried a new format starting in February, March.
Right. It was
good. So that was kind of like a hybrid of kind of like what we're still doing. It's our new format where some episodes is kind of like a solo, like just me. I put you all to sleep, and then other episodes where we have, you know, bring on other people. And so, yeah, I think the last episode you would have been was like something in March.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always here behind the camera doing things, but being in front of it, it's like, gotta get back in the zone.
I'm going to say it. So I was trying to do, Bo was unavailable one day when I was trying to do some recording. So I tried to do it without him there, and it just did not go over well. So
he tries. He calls me. He's like, this is hard. I'm like, yeah.
Anyways, so Bo is back, and we are here for, we've been in a series, and this is part three of what we're calling Reboot. And the whole idea is we're not just going to long to get back to normal. We're embracing and even creating the new normal. You know,
normal is over.
Yes, normal. Well, normal as we knew. And I heard someone, and I think I'm repeating myself a little bit from, but I talked about it with Josh in the last podcast. I heard a thought leader say, we're probably only going to get to 70 to 80% of what we knew as normal. And I think that's a pretty good gauge. I mean, you got to think about, I mean, right now, at the time of recording and probably at the time we release this, the mask is still all the craze. And, you know, that makes it exciting for everyone, and I'm not going to take a stance on that. I personally don't like it, you know, whatever. I mean, there's all types of varying opinions on that, but you know, I even thought about this, like somebody was talking the other day, like when it comes to food service, I mean, we may see people wearing masks forever now, you know.
That's sad.
When I go to like a Chipotle, it's a little bit of a relief because you think of it, they lean over your food and whatever.
Okay, Subway, wear them forever.
Yeah.
I've been to Subway.
So there's some of it that I'm like, okay, I'm okay with that. But all that to say, there's a difference. I remember when I had my daughter. We're like, oh man, when are we going to get back to normal? You know, life is normal, and it's like, well, with a kid. There is no back to normal.
This is just the new life.
It's just, and the term we started using, okay, when is life going to normalize? When is it going to feel more normal? You know, we're going to adjust to the new normal.
Well, looking back to your last episode, you had some really good points. And really, in a way, of course, life has changed for personal, for church, and a lot of other things. But what you said before is some people needed this little shakeup to say, hey, mm-hmm. this is something that was normal. But this should not be at all.
Yeah.
So give us a quick recap on just what we talked about before. Just kind of that refresher of, hey, not being normal is okay because now we have a chance to renew, reboot, which is a fantastic term, by the way. It was great. Whoever you came up with that. It was awesome.
Oh, really. Great.
I was just like, that's genius. That's perfect. So just give us a quick reboot on that.
Well, the idea is whenever you reboot a computer, you're completely kind of just, you're shutting everything down and then starting it back up. That's very obvious. Okay, well, it does a few things. We talk about how it refreshes components. So, you know, sometimes computers, you know, desktops especially, they'll run. And so when you restart it, it kind of gives it a chance to refresh.
One of my favorite things that you said, and it's so true with a computer, but even when it comes to churches, is whenever you do an update or restart a computer, you're like, I had no idea that was running.
Yeah.
And that was taking up so much time and space. And it's like, why was my fan running? Why is my computer working so hard? I was like, I had no idea that was clogging me up.
So that was the other thing we said, is it kills those unessential tasks. How many churches, you know, got involved, got kind of wrapped up in these programs and activities over the years. And, you know, obviously in the shutdown, nothing, what we said, extracurricular, maybe outside of the online weekend services, nothing could happen. And so now that you're starting back up, you're like, wait, you know, should we just kill that thing altogether?
People are realizing, okay, we can run on a bare bones type of field. We don't have to have everything, which is a good, once again, not the circumstances you want, because in a perfect world, you want churches and church leaders to realize that anyway.
Maybe
they kind of got the push they needed to say, oh, I got to kill that thing.
Exactly. And so with that in mind, it forces those updates. Right. You know, how many times with a computer do we ignore the updates? We ignore the software updates. But then when we restart, it forces them to install. We have to wait the 20-plus minutes for it to install. It's frustrating. But the updates that it bring are often very welcomed. And so the idea here is that we're going to reboot. And then the last episode was just mind-blowing, talking to Josh Ermler about this new term, phygital. And how they did this. I don't even want to take the time to recap because it's just so good. Just go back and listen to the episode. Go back. If you're just joining us, you're going to want to go back and listen to that episode, because how they created that, have created that hybrid of physical and digital, phygital as he calls it, is just incredible. And so to review a little bit of what we talked about with Josh, we talk about when it comes to these changes, you have to embrace the data. We kind of went over some stats. According to Barna, nearly half of all the surveyed congregations have reported higher attendance in numbers when compared to a typical in-person service. Now, this is true for, as me and Josh discussed, this is true to like pre-Easter. So there was kind of this little bit of a buzz, like kind of everybody was like, oh man, church is shut down. This is a bummer. And other people that maybe or unchurched were curious, what are churches going to do? And so it kind of created this little, people were flocking to online church. Yeah. And then unfortunately after Easter, if you were not offering some type of interactive experience, the numbers started to go down.
People expected a lot right away.
Yeah.
They really did.
And kind of the excitement of church being exclusively online, I think, was enough. But after that, when they realized, okay, I'm essentially just watching a guy on TV, it didn't have the value there kind of went down.
Well, let me throw this in there, is because those few weeks after, the quarantine, and that we kind of started, hey, churches are going to start going online more, is people, and this is common sense, but you doesn't really realize it until you do it. If you're physically visiting a church on a Sunday, maybe you can hit one, two, depends on the times of the services start. When you're visiting churches online, you can visit 10 on a Sunday. I just want to go back and, so people were realizing it's not just enough to have a service online. It's like, we got to have something, and not that we're in competition with each other. That's not what it's about.
Of course not.
But at the same time, it's like, if this church has just their online, but this is more interactive and offers me more, kind of more spin-off things, it really was a race to say, hey, we have to have more than just a live stream or something. We have to pull resources together to have something a little bit more exciting.
Exactly. Yeah, because, think about how many people on, Easter Sunday sat around all day saying, yeah, you know what, okay, that church is over, let's go to the next one. It's almost like flipping the channels. So we saw this spike, and then, yes, unfortunately, a little bit of a decline. But nonetheless, we said this, the creators of the church online platform, Life Church, they reported nearly 2.5 million live stream viewership increase during the shutdown. And with that, they had 3,000 active users as far as churches, 3,000 churches actively using their church online platform to provide church online. Well, then it went up to 24, or actually, I think they're knocking on 30,000 now.
30,000. Yeah, that is a real stat.
Well done, Life Church.
And just also, just this idea that how many churches, for it to grow 10x, said, it takes a shutdown for me to realize I need to offer an online experience or to enhance my online experience or whatnot. And so as we continue to think about this idea of how we can reach digitally, like we said when we talked to Josh offered a fantastic way for this phygital experience, and his way of doing it is truly awesome. But we do understand that not everybody feels like they can do that or that it's a good fit for them. So there's plenty of other ways to engage people online, and you still have to, because millennial church attendance is under half, unfortunately, according to most polls. I'm talking about physical attendance. However, most of them are consuming video content daily. And so it's this, and that is once again something I've loved about this church online kind of boom, is that now when you get on YouTube, sometimes the suggested videos I'm seeing are church, and they're of church services. And so
Sorry, okay, one personal thing to add here, just ideas. When the church whole quarantine thing happened, this is what was crazy about that, is when you don't have something, you revert to, hey, I got to kind of find a replacement for this. I listened to so many sermons on podcasts. Yeah. I probably, the first few weeks and even a month or so after that initially happened, I consumed more content digitally than physically I'd ever. I mean, it was just like, holy cow, I can listen to two or three sermons a day. If I mean, you know, obviously it depends on your situation, but it was just like, I can consume so much more. I think a lot of people are doing that now.
Well, over the past few years, you and me have become big podcasters.
We love our
podcast. And so that's a whole other thing. I don't, but it's something that's worth noting. If you're not on these platforms, YouTube, obviously Facebook, and then podcast, and here's one of the biggest myths. Podcasting is expensive. Nope, that is a myth. Podcasting is actually pretty affordable, especially if you've already got the audio content from your sermon. Well, you virtually have to do nothing extra to produce the content, and distributing it by way of getting it online is actually free. Quick plug for Anchor.fm. That's what we use and what a lot of podcasters use to get their audio podcast out there. It's super
okay,
simple.
I used to do that every, it's a few clicks. Yeah, I mean, literally, if you got the audio file, it's sermon title, whatever, and it's up.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. So, yeah. It's way back in the archive. So you have to be on these platforms. YouTube specifically, this is unreal, has over 2 billion users on average, and on average, 1 billion hours of video watched every day. YouTube, you know, when we think about video, it is the place to be, obviously. And the largest demographic of that is millennials. So as we think about reaching different generations, you've got to offer this online digital experience, and you have to embrace that digital experience.
Going into, we're about to get into, you know, things we can do to enhance the digital experience. This is something that every church leader out there needs to realize. And we've already said it, so I'm just going to say it again. Life Church, they're incredible at this.
Yeah.
They make the online audience feel just as important and just as involved and just as there as physical people are.
Yeah.
They cater to them just as much, the way that he preaches, the way that they, hey, you click below me, you know, go to the Sling, do all that. They do so much work to involve those people. And here's what's crazy, is my thought is, and I know you feel the same way, the people that are online or digitally there are just as important, if not more, than the physical people that are there for a lot of reasons. Obviously, when you've got people that are there physically, you know, it kind of adds to the atmosphere. I understand that. But people that are there online, those people can share more. They're more likely to share more content. Obviously, the whole giving thing online, and there's a lot of churches out there. They boast that their, you know, online audience or online congregation is so many thousand or whatever.
Yeah.
And I used to think, nah, that's a myth. It's a lie. But you know what, though? It's not, because so many people, they become part of a church, say, hey, I actually feel a part of this, even though I can't be there physically, and they're doing a great job at that.
Yeah.
So before we go into this, just realize people that are not there physically are just as important, and they are just as there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and like you said, these churches, you know, you mentioned Life Church. You think of some of the big-name churches out there, Life Church, Elevation, maybe Church Home, these other, with Judah Smith, these other big churches. A couple things they have in common. Obviously, yeah, we call them celebrity churches. Maybe they have celebrity pastors, whatever. And you know, we could get into the nuances of, oh, if they just got lucky. But seriously, something that is common is that all these churches are growing by way of maybe some type of multi-site ministry. And the way that they are establishing new sites and campuses is by taking advantage of their online. They're pushing online, and they're literally reading the data and the locations that people are watching from. And by and large, whenever they see, hey, we have a really big online gathering here, okay, let's go ahead and look into starting an actual physical campus there. Multi-site, I know that's maybe not for everyone, but nonetheless, this whole concept that church online, in fact, I love this idea that I've heard in the past, not just calling it church online or live stream, actually using the term digital missions, because that's what this is. Think about the outreach that you have, the potential you have to reach people in your area, your community. You think about the Great Commission. You know, we're supposed to reach our local area, our region, you know, maybe our country, our nation, and then the uttermost. Think of that opportunity you have to reach people in, yes, in your local area, but also in your, you know, maybe your region, your country, and then across the world.
We did some teaching segments one time, and I hit on this for just a second, and one of my last closing statement was, don't tell me that the Apostle Paul, people like that, would not have used the technology that we have today.
Yeah.
If they had all these things available to them, they'd say, I would be insane not to use these things.
Absolutely.
I can reach millions of people just like that.
Yeah.
Explain to me why I would not use this.
The most advanced technology that the Apostle Paul had available to him was quill and parchment. And literally,
look at what he did.
But this is literally advanced technology, because a lot of people were uneducated. They couldn't read. They couldn't write. Paul could. He was educated. He knew how to use that technology, and he knew how to use that tool to reach people. And what would he do? Well, look at any of the epistles. He would write a letter. So Romans. He would write a letter to the Roman church or to the Corinthian church. He would send it to them. That church, what would they do? They would take it, they would read it to their congregation, or they would, oftentimes they'd read it aloud, then they'd take it, they'd make a handwritten copy, and they'd send it on to the next church. They literally were doing the best version of some type of online church that they could do. They didn't have the medium of video or podcast, but they said, we're going to take the medium and we're going to distribute it. They were literally making handwritten copies and sending it over the next one. As quickly as it can multiply. And during that time, the first century church, they pretty much reached the known world at that time for Christ. Now, yes, the population was much less, but their tools of mass communication was so much more limited. I mean, we're talking about a world where you had to walk everywhere, ride a horse everywhere. And so this idea of digital, reaching people digitally, once again, I love the term digital missions.
That's solid.
And don't get me wrong. Please, once again, I have to throw a disclaimer in every once in a while. I'm all about people reaching missionaries, for example. All about missionaries. All about people going and physically going to another country to reach people. But consider this. Once again, with the reach you have into another country. In fact, somebody, I can't remember what church it was, but they said this is something they're investing into. They are investing some of their missions dollars into taking their English sermons and having them translated into different languages. And then they're taking that and they're broadcasting it in countries that use that language. Now, of course, is anything as effective as physical ministry? Well, perhaps not. You know, there may be no replacement for that, but it's certainly a fantastic way to reach people. And so this idea of digital is not just digital missions, or not just digital, like I said, online church or digital church or whatever. Like I said, I love that term, digital missions, or locally maybe digital outreach.
That runs a close second to your fidgetal.
That
one's killing me.
Josh Ermler's term. I got to give him props for that. And digital missions, I've seen it before too. But hey, I'm just talking about it.
All right, let's get a little bit more into digital experience. So we got left here.
Well, so when it comes to the digital experience, we did, well, just to review a few things that we did talk about with Josh. You know, when it comes to you know, actually, you may not be able to do something like he did, but if nothing else, you can acknowledge your online audience. And so here we are. We're looking into the camera. But if I'm looking over here, I'm talking to Bo, and we're just kind of looking at each other. And then I turn in what we call in film breaking the fourth wall, and we look into the camera and we communicate to you directly. If you're watching, it has just a little bit more meaning. You feel, even though you know it's not maybe authentic in that I'm not really there, you feel a slight sense of connection as you make eye contact with the camera. So that's a simple thing to do. Just look at the camera, acknowledge it, say, hey, thanks for joining us. And remember, you know, just like they say, if you're a good public speaker, I don't know if this is true, it can be very difficult to do in a large audience, but if you're a good public speaker, you'll try to meet eye contact with everyone in your audience at some point during your talk. Now, obviously that's not always possible, but they say make it a goal to at least try. And so treat your camera like one of those audience members and look at them often, not just just once or twice. Try to look at them every, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. I don't know. I can't give a good rate. Whatever you feel is right. But look at
it. It'll become normal for you. Exactly. Once you begin to say, hey, yep, I need to address them, acknowledge them, it'll become normal.
And so we can acknowledge our online audience. And because remember this, the live stream service is like a window. It's people looking in and literally kind of getting a glimpse of your service. And, you know, that you can treat them like spectators who are just watching, or you can do your best to treat them like people who are actually a part of your service and part of your experience. And with that in mind, you want to encourage that engagement. So Josh had a really great way of doing it, once again, with this idea of actually using live Zoom calls and things like that. And if you say, well, I'm not really equipped to do that, well, there's so we talked about the Church Online platform. They have a chat built in, so you can kind of communicate in the chat. And then YouTube has this, Facebook Live has this. And you could just encourage conversation, even though it's going to be just by way of chat. You could encourage that. And again, as the person leading the service, if you're leading the service or you're preaching the sermon, you know, you could occasionally, I've heard online people who are doing, hey, leave this in the chat, let us know what you think, whatever. Just an opportunity to create that interaction there.
I always enjoy the shout outs, like, oh, so and so in Houston's joining us.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and you see that on live, you know, like, hey, tell us where you're watching from and all that. And it just creates that interaction. And then lastly, one of the ways we can just practically do this is we talk about this idea of simulating a live experience. So we talked about the Church Online platform, YouTube, Facebook. YouTube and Facebook have a feature called Premiere, and it allows you to take a pre-recorded video and premiere it as if it was live. And so it has this, and the nice thing is Facebook, especially that algorithm favors premieres and live, and so it gets it kind of more noticed, but it premieres it as if it was live and allows you to interact in that chat. Church Online offers the same thing. They call it simulated live. It's the same thing. You take a link to a pre-recorded, you know, video on YouTube, you paste it in there, you set it up, and you schedule it when the live service is supposed to start, and it simulates it as if it was live. Now, of course, there's on-demand viewing where, okay, after the service is up there, it's just there on YouTube for people to go watch at their convenience. Right. And that's good too. The nice thing about this simulated live is that it allows people to interact in real time. Yeah. So even though the service itself is not necessarily being broadcasted live, because of the simulated live, you can go in and people can continue to interact. And so whenever you said during your live service, hey, put this in the chat or whatever, people are going to put it in the chat.
They're going to start their own conversation together. Like, hey, there's other people watching this at the same time that I know.
And here's kind of a way that I think would be interesting for maybe a smaller church to utilize this, a church with a pastor who maybe is able to do this. You can actually be in that chat. And so you could, so whenever you're recording or doing your true live service, you can say, hey, if you're watching, I'm actually going to be in the chat down here. So be sure to ask me any questions you have about the sermon and I will answer it. I do my best to answer it right there in real time, kind of like a ask me anything type feel. And so simulating a live experience, I think that this is going to be for churches that want to do church online right, I think this is going to be crucial to take advantage of this, because it takes, other than to do it right, you got to get people to keep an eye on that, chat and all that. And, you know, you got to man people in real time for that. But to actually just schedule and have these things going out on YouTube, Facebook, Church Online, it really takes no extra effort other than just scheduling it and making sure it goes out.
When it comes to, we were talking about podcasts a little bit ago, when it comes to podcast episodes, to anything on YouTube, take advantage of scheduling things. Mm-hmm. When you can batch things together and go online and schedule things for, you know, whatever the case, it's just take advantage of those automations. Yeah. Man, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Take advantage of those tools.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big help.
Exactly.
A little plug there.
Yeah.
Because that's helped me personally.
There's a lot of ways you can engage that digital audience. And so then as we move on, kind of the final thought for this episode, And this has to do with taking the correct approach. And I'm going to be honest with you, this is going to bleed into your church philosophy in general. So if I'm overstepping, I'm sorry. But this is something that's very important and has been very much brought out during this time of pandemic. So I was listening to, the best way for me to communicate this point is really just with this quick story. So I was actually listening to a pastor's podcast here not too long ago. And, you know, he was celebrating kind of like a milestone there in his church. He'd been there for just shy of a decade. And, you know, he was like, hey, you know, I'm so happy to be here. Now, he wasn't bragging on all his things. He was just more expressing his gratitude. But I know from other sources that when this pastor first came, their church was running about 200 in attendance. Any given Sunday. 200 actually would have probably been a big day. Now he's in the Northeast, and so the reopening process has been very regulated, very difficult. So we're going to use pre-COVID numbers. Pre-COVID, he was averaging just around 1,000 every Sunday. And like I said, he's been there less than a decade. Essentially, here's how it's been. Year over year, the attendance at this church has increased about 100 year over year. And so really, when you look at the numbers, just it really is explosive growth from 200 to about 1,000 and really a very, like I said, less than a decade, pretty short amount of time. And he was talking about, he said, I am so glad we have a relational church. And he basically said, and this is a guy who's experienced, so I respect what he has to say. He said, there's really two different types of churches. And if you observe, it's true. There's churches that are attractional or event-based, and there's churches that are relational and they're connection-based. And the ones that did well and are doing well and coming out on this side of the pandemic strong and healthy, they're the relational churches, because their church was not about a building, not about a campus, not even about a worship experience. It wasn't even about like a time of the week that we meet. It was about the connections. And every church has that to some extent, but I've seen churches of all kinds, on all different denominations, all different sides of the spectrum, that are so attractional, and they're all about their events and all about what they can do to draw people in. And there's a level of that that's necessary.
Of course.
Every church is going to have those events.
Yeah, there's those special Sundays.
But there's so much about it that whenever this happens, and now we cannot meet.
I was just going to say, well, if all you have is those big events, those big draws, when that's all taken away, it's like, well, this is empty.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any connection with people, because I'm here. Here's it. We're people. We love events. We love big things.
Yeah, of course.
Nothing wrong with that. But if you take that away, it's just like, well, I don't really know anybody that. If you don't get down to the relationships.
Exactly.
But if you take the events away, okay, there's some people. You know, I've got friends. It's like, this whole thing really hasn't changed that much, because my relationship with you is not just doing things all the time. It's like, hey, we're good, because that our relationship was strong before, just based off of, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm probably not doing that justice.
No. Everything you're saying, makes complete sense. Once again, it's not every church is going to have those need for events and things to attract people, but it's all about, ultimately, it is about relations. Really, church is all about relationship. It's about a relationship with Jesus, a relationship with God, and a relationship with other people.
And a side note, to have that strong a relationship church in the Northeast, that's huge. Like, that's not having a relationship like a church in Georgia or the Deep South, where people are naturally to have that in that part of the country. That's huge. That's big. Yeah.
And I think this really highlights a way that we need to change the way we see church metrics. There's church attendance. I believe plays a role in your metrics. Obviously, if you have an increasing attendance, okay, that's a good thing. However, it's not the only metric, and I would argue, and I've heard others argue, and I'd agree that it's not the most important. The most important are kind of what most look at as secondary metrics, and that's things like, okay, well, how many people are getting plugged into groups? How many people are returning week after week? They're not just coming once. I mean, I have heard of one church, and they've kind of turned it around now, but one church that I knew of out west, you know, they looked at their retention rate one time, and it was like, man, they could bring so many people in, but they had so much trouble getting them to stay. And how you get people to stay is with a relationship. That's really the only way people stay.
I think we had a podcast episode dedicated to this, somewhat of this thought. If you can get a guest to come once, that's awesome.
Yeah.
If they come back a second time, you got them.
Exactly.
If they come back the next week, something happened in them that said, this is the place for me, Yep. I think we did
an episode on that. It's probably been last year, but we did an episode, and that's so true, because this idea of a first-time guest, well, that's great, but a second-time guest, that's gold. I mean, that is really what counts. And then, obviously, I don't know the statistics. I think we had some stats during that particular episode. But, people that you can get them in that second and third and beyond, they're more likely to get plugged in permanently. And so all that to say, this relational aspect, relational versus attractional. I remember a long time ago, I heard this statement, and it's nothing original to me. I don't even remember the guy who told me for the first time, but he said, what you win them with is what you keep them with. And so if you're going to win them with things that are attractive and these exciting events and activities, you know what? Once those go away, how are you going to keep them? You know, and yes, once again, nothing wrong with events and activities, but in each one of those, you have to prove that it's all about a relationship. You have to show and get people, do everything you can to get them connected. So, again, it just emphasizes this point. The church is not a building. You know, it's not that worship experience. It's not just, you know, an hour or two out of the week. It's the body of Christ. It's the people, you know. It's not that building. And this staying connected. I mean, you think about the early church again, going back to then. I mean, they had to meet in their homes. You know, they were under the Roman Empire. And depending on whose rule they were under, it was illegal. And you could, literally, we hear about Christians getting killed for their stuff. I've had this conversation with people before. You know, if the day, this was kind of a test for if the day, and I don't like being a fearmonger and a doomsday prophet, but if the day, God forbid, were ever to come and we could not congregate as normal, this was a little bit of a litmus test. What do you need to do to adjust? What do you need to do to say, you know what? Yeah, my church has been really attractional, event-based. I need to shift to make it more relational-based. Because, yes, there's nothing that replaces being physically together, but through technology, you can connect people through Zoom calls, through, you know, FaceTime and things like that. And so what can you do to keep people, make it all about connecting people and all about those relationships? Well, Bo, it's been good to have you back.
This has been good, man. I'm
it's good. Yeah, it is. And thank you. Thank you for watching. As always, if you're watching, listening, wherever you are consuming the content, be sure to subscribe. I think we're available on just about every podcast platform that you can think of. Anchor. Use Anchor. We talked about Anchor earlier. So be sure to subscribe. And then if you're watching YouTube and Facebook, you know, like the video. But more importantly, we'd love to hear back from you. So use the comments below to kind of leave us some thoughts, ask some questions. If there's a topic you want us to cover in the future, be sure to leave that there. Of course, it means so much to us when you share and you tell other people about other church leaders about this content. If it was valuable to you, don't be a jerk and hoard it to yourself, man. Share it with somebody. Shoot it out there through a text or social media or something like that. Well, we are so glad that you have joined us here on Church Media HQ. Bo, do you remember? I know our saying. Do you know our new saying?
Oh, you put me on the spot. On the spot if you can. I always slaughtered this.
We'll give you a chance and I'll correct you if you're wrong.
Give me a hint.
Yeah, I was good. I'll get you started. So we always say, remember to try something new.
Yeah.
Because it's always better to fail at something.
Oh, I'm so sorry, dude. I thought you meant way back at church meeting.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about our most recent little closing statement.
That's fantastic.
You know it.
Because it's always better to fail at something, or fail at the incredible, than to succeed at something that is average.
That's it. We'll see you next time on Church Media HQ.